This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over The Christmas Cottage. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time. Are you ready for one dry kiss? Fa la 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 la.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one. It's November, so it's basically Christmas time movie in the month of November and December.
In Corinne's world, it's November, so it's practically Christmas time.
We all know what Thanksgiving truly is. It's Christmas solstice, and let's just run with that.
It's practice must.
I am here with my lovely co-host, who I made all her Christmas wishes come true by choosing this movie, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Seriously? Is that what you're telling yourself these days? And I am here with my co-host and best friend, who is as real as the snow is in all those Hallmark movies, all those Hallmark Christmas movies, ouch! Corinne Edding.
Oh, I am pained for that comment.
So, Corinne, anything been going on with you?
Why, yes. My birthday wish has finally come true.
Oh, really? Do tell.
Well, you see, randomly, we managed to get a lot of people listening to our podcasts through a very random episode that we did. And because of that, when I said all that I wanted for my birthday in October was ratings and reviews, we got extra ratings and reviews. Beautiful 5 stars, beautiful reviews. Thank you, gentle listeners. All you new gentle listeners who are joining us.
Yes. Yes. This is our first recorded podcast after dun 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 the event Obsessed Mess 2023.
Which things are still unfolding from that, surprisingly. And I'm just like, you know what? I find it all very interesting. And also,
yeah,
I'm ready for a little lighthearted action in my life right now.
Oh, and lo and behold, here comes a Christmas movie. Oh, Corinne, it's like your birthday all over again, because nobody loves Christmas better than Corinne.
Oh my gosh, it's the time of magic and wonder and romance, and it's everything. Also, I just want to say that, you know, I chose this movie specifically for Tamara because when she was trying to do something nice for me and do a Hallmark Christmas movie during Christmas in August, she originally wanted to do this movie.
Oh, I did?
Yes, you did. She had done her research. She had looked at lists and she was like, Christmas Cottage, it's one of the top rated movies that this person wrote an article about. And I was like, really? You want to do Christmas Cottage? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, okay.
Somebody somewhere said it was good. It was like the top 10 Hallmark movies or 20 you should watch. And I'm like, well, if it's on this list, it can't be a lie. It was a lie.
I was like, look, I had deleted it off of our Hallmark movie DVR, but I was like, if you would like me to record it for you, I'm happy to do that. And Tam was like, yes, record it for me. And I was like, okay. And so I did, but it wasn't in time for her to do it as a movie. She did something else, which was delightful. But I was like, for you, Tamara, we will do The Christmas Cottage. This top rated, I'm using air quotes, top rated movie.
You know what? I'm feeling a little raw right now because, yes, you did Christmas Cottage, and I do appreciate it immensely. But I also, before the Obsessed Fest debacle went down, I had this wonderful idea to have another episode because Corinne does not watch scary movies.
I don't.
She will not, does not, will, won't not, won't not.
Won't not. That? I won't will not. Not.
Won't, she won't not. That's even stronger than will not. She won't not.
I will not.
Watch a scary movie. So I picked the cheesiest scary movie that freaked the hell out of me back in the 90s. And I'm like, I'm going to recap and I'm going to tell it to you. So then you'll be experiencing the scary movie without having to watch it. So I watched The Fog with Jamie Lee Curtis,
ooh,
three times for you, outlined it fully, had pictures and visual cues that I was going to give you, and then the shit hit the fan, so I did all that for nothing.
Except for that you were the person who suggested that we do the Obsessed Fest recap. So you were the one that decided to set aside the fog for perhaps the next Hallows Eve.
I do have the outline.
Or if you're feeling a little feisty, sometime in the new year.
Oh, believe you me, because my next movie is going to be Christmas with the Cranks, and that has an older Jamie Lee Curtis, and the Fog movie I did had the younger Jamie Lee Curtis, and I told you all the fucking problems I had with her role in that movie, and I am for sure gonna do a little compare and contrast between Jamie Lee Curtis a la Fog and Jamie Lee Curtis a la Christmas at the Cranks.
I'm just so excited. I just gotta say jinga, 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 jinga.
And she will be doing that a lot throughout the episode, gentle listeners. In case you haven't joined us for Christmas in July, or last Christmas in December, or Christmas in November, or the last Christmas in July. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I take that back. We did Christmas in August this year, because why the fuck not?
Because so. Tamara said so, and I was like, okay. Tamara says Christmas in August, I say okay. Tamara says recap Obsessed Fest, I say okay.
You make me sound like a bully. No! I'm just the one calling the shots here. Listen here, Corinne, we're going to be doing this and this and this, and you have no say-so in it. What? What? You questioning me? You giving me side-eye?
Gentle listeners, it's fine. We have a very collaborative process here at One Dry Kiss.
Weaky-weaky. Yes.
No. No. We support each other in our ideas. And so we can always try things. And if they work out, great. And if they don't, then we won't do it again. It's just that easy. Done.
And then we move on. Moving right along.
Speaking of moving right along, Tamara, did you typey-typey out a little synopsis for us about this gem of a movie, Christmas Cottage?
Synopsis! Corinne wrote, do I know my name? Tamara! Please typey-typey one of your world-renowned synopsises.
Yes.
Here it is. Lacey, played by Merritt Patterson, is an architectural designer? I'm not entirely sure what her job is. Is she an architect or a designer? Because she kind of, like, gets rolled into both roles.
Yes.
Okay. So that's a yes from Corinne. All right. Who's in business with the love of her life, Roger, played by Victor Zinnick Jr.?
Oh, love of her life,
incidentally...
Huh?
The love of her life. Yes. Okay. My synopsis, I get to tell my own truth.
Okay.
Who, incidentally, Victor Zinnick, by the way, Jr., has a seriously intense IMDb photo. So I was like, I just have to dog-ear that for you to check it out. Because when I looked at his little, like, window photo, I thought he was portraying, like, this is me as a serial killer because he looked so intense. When you blow it up, it gets less intense, but that little tiny image, I was like, ah.
All right. I'm a looking and, oh, okay. Yeah, he looks like he's about ready to knock someone over the head and drag them into a dark alley. Good times.
Yeah.
Not in the Hallmark movie. In the Hallmark movie, he looks quite fine, but.
He gives some serious stare. He gives some serious stare. Not nearly as serious as this other guy I'm going to talk about.
Oh, okay.
Lacey and Roger are about to land a multi-million dollar deal, but Lacey has to duck out 5 days before the big meeting because it's Christmas and her bestie Ava, played by Brittany Wilson's, wedding. And seriously, what the fuck? Who schedules a meeting right after Christmas? That might be a little sus in the business world to me. And who also gets married Christmas Eve? But we'll get into all of that later.
You have such a big problem with those holiday weddings. You're like, why do people get married?
And I will tell you why. I have my backup information to support my opinion.
Okay.
I've got the bullet points.
Oh.
I've got the visuals.
Did you make a PowerPoint presentation?
I did. If you will refer to page 4.
That'd be slide number 4. Yes.
I'm so sorry. No, I didn't make a PowerPoint presentation. I just have a lot of strong feelings around it.
Shocking.
So if I'm anti-Christmas wedding, I sure hope you're bringing your pro flag for it, because you always are like, why are you so against Christmas weddings? I'm like, why are you so for Christmas weddings, Corinne?
I'm no more for them than I am for any other day of the week, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll have a knockdown, drag-out fight later about
okay.
it.
Okay.
Ava's brother, Ian, with an E, played by Steve Lund, is also in town for the wedding, and he and Lacey have a history that was cut short because they were young and wanted different things. But now they're thrust into the Christmas cottage together and are forced to reckon with the cottage decorations and their growing feelings for each other.
Ooh.
Will Lacey stay with Roger, where together they will erect cold steel modern dwellings together? Or will she find the warm comforts and familiarity with the old cottage and Ian with an E? Find out with us as we drive up into the Hallmark Hills to visit the Christmas cottage.
Yay! That was beautifully done.
Thank you.
You know, I have to say, Tamara, is there anything really more romantic than emotional affairs?
Yes, physical ones.
Oh, okay.
There's only one of those in this movie, though. And if it's a Hallmark movie, and if you've seen any sort of Hallmark movie, I'm sure you can guess which one it is.
They don't really get physical in Hallmark movies.
No, they never do. But we're not going to tell you that right off the bat. Corinne
yes.
can dive into her first section and take us to the Christmas cottage, if you will, Corinne.
Yay! But first, we're not in the Christmas cottage. No. We're in a model home in San Francisco, ostensibly.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Lacey shows a couple of executives from Pine Bay Development around a smart home. It has a very modern look with floor-to-ceiling windows. She illustrates how the windows can change. So when you look out of them, you can have everything from a sunny beach to the New York skyline on view. She explains to the impressed execs that the house even senses your patterns and will adjust its temperature, lighting, and even automatically make coffee depending on how you use your space. Well, yeah, I see you chuckling there, huh?
That sounds like a nightmare, honestly. As somebody who doesn't adhere to a strict schedule, I don't want to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning trying to get some last minute shit done and have the lights go, meow. It's time to sleep, Tamara. This is when you normally should be sleeping. Don't you want to relax and calm down? Yes, I do, but I can't. So fuck off, lights.
And they're like, but we're amber lights. We're going to make you relax and calm down.
Yes, I don't want to relax and calm down. Leave me alone. I got another half hour before I have to finish. Yeah.
So then we would be blaming the smart home on why you didn't finish your podcast notes.
Notes, yeah. It was the smart house's fault. I swear to God. Just like dogs eat homework, this smart house put me to sleep 2 hours before I could actually finish this thing.
The smart house is just looking out for your well-being, Tamara. The smart house knows, okay?
And it knows what's best for you. Don't question the smart house.
Nothing creepy going on here.
Oh, no. Yeah, I feel real, real comfortable with this house. And it's in fucking a beautiful wooded area. At least I thought it was until they went through the whole smart window functions.
Yeah.
Why would you want the smart window functions of other beautiful scenery when you have beautiful scenery like right there outside your absolutely fine clear window?
Because there isn't actually beautiful scenery out there. That's why you need the smart windows creating the illusion of beautiful scenery.
No, because the camera panned from up above. And so the house was in like this beautiful wooded area. And when you got in the house, beautiful wooded area.
Oh, well, also, you know, when you pay that much for a smart house, you will not be able to afford to go on vacation. So, wah, 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 wah. Look, it's Maui out there. Yay. See? It works out
fair,
just great.
Fair. She was also trying to tote it like, it's the house of the future. See, we have a room for the gym and a room for your home office so you can incorporate all of your lifestyles into one dwelling. And I'm like, the people already have that now as it is. That's not anything like new. There's home gyms and home offices.
Ooh.
I know.
That was pretty revolutionary sounding to me, I've got to say. Unlike Tamara, the execs are very excited with the presentation and are already imagining their own personal smart houses.
And if they couldn't imagine the individual rooms in the smart houses, they must have missed the huge sign that says home office on the door or home gym on the other door. Because those things were labeled to Jesus. You didn't see that?
No! That's hilarious.
They huge signs that were like, this is your home. They didn't open the door. So we just had to take their word for it.
Look, if it's got a label on it, it must be true. Mm. By the way, this is my envelope with $1 million. After the meeting, Lacey's coworker, Roger, excitedly tells her that he's pretty sure that they got the gig and whisks her into a conference room where everyone is in the midst of a holiday party. The man explains to the room that if they get the Pine Bay development deal, they will be building 20 houses. Yay! So party now while you can, because in the new year it's all about overtime. Woo!
I know, and everybody around him laughed. They're like, ha ha! Great. And I was like, I'd be like, shit.
Yeah.
Everybody seemed real thrilled with that information, and that would not be me.
Isn't overtime exciting? Yay.
No.
Back in Roger's office.
Work-life balance. Work-life balance.
Seriously. Oh, so many people I've been out on dates with, they're like, and then I work this job, and then I work this job, and then I work this job. And I'm like, but I thought you were only paying this much in your rent-controlled space. And they're like, yes, but... you know, the more money, the better. And I'm like, don't you want to have fun? I like having fun.
My idea of having fun is getting a job at Trader Joe's. That's my dream.
Doing their art labels?
Yes. Like, I want a second job to be making, to make the Trader Joe's chalkboard signs. The only thing, I've applied to that damn job like 5 or 6 times in various cities that I've lived at, but they never hire me. And they always have that like caveat that, and you'll be asked to do regular responsibilities. This isn't your only task for the day. And I was like,
Yeah, and they pay kind of crap too. So, womp womp.
Oh, I know that. I didn't expect it to be like, putting me in my lavish lifestyle or anything.
Tamara, when she works there, she's just going to be breaking all these packages. So she'd be like, oh no, I guess we won't be able to sell this. And she'll be taking it home with her. All of her groceries are free.
Yes. Oh, darn. The olive jar accidentally opened. Shit. Damn. I think you guys are probably going to need me to take this off your hands, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I would do that for them.
You are such a giver, Tamara. That's what I really like about
you. I am. Mm-hmm.
Back in Roger's office, Lacey laments, this timing couldn't be worse. And Roger is puzzled. Why? You've worked through plenty of Christmases. Oh, doesn't that sound fun?
Mm-mm. No, I've done that too. God damn it.
Lacey agrees. Yeah, but I have Ava's wedding to go to. I'm leaving tonight. Roger, who I'm now beginning to think may be Lacey's lover man, because he knows a lot about what's going on in her life, he protests. But the wedding's 5 days away. You don't need to leave now.
Oh, yeah, so many problems with this movie. This is the start of them, and this is definitely not the end of them, because I have some opinions about Ava, too.
Oh.
Continue.
Okay. Lacey rebuts, I'm her maid of honor. If I don't show up tomorrow, I'm going to be in deep trouble. Roger unhelpfully suggests that she call out sick, but Lacey holds firm. I'm pretty sure bailing on your best friend's wedding is grounds for friend divorce. I'm going. And Christmas is the time of miracles, so I promise we'll get everything done and land the deal. Have I ever let you down? He walks over to her and says sultrily, never. And gives her a super hot kiss on the cheek. Almost as good as a forehead kiss. Am I right?
No. No. No to the forehead kisses. Cheek kisses are okay. No. Absolutely not. Didn't tell you that Larry is a forehead kisser, did I?
Of course, Larry.
You reap what you sow.
Your man is a forehead kisser.
My man is a forehead kisser. Yeah. And he does it, and I'm like, it's fine. I like this. So I guess I'm a hypocrite now.
Aww.
And just like that, we see a sign saying, welcome to Wallowa Lake. As Lacey drives into a picturesque white town with a smattering of snow everywhere.
Honestly, we have no idea how it's pronounced because they never actually say the name of it throughout the entire movie. It just is a sign. Yeah.
I'm going to call it Owala.
Yes, I think you should call it Owala Lake.
Owala. After our favorite water bottles.
Yay.
Chink. But as she drives through the town, I have to say to everybody and the gentle listeners, make sure not to blink, folks, because we've just passed the one person, one of the two people of color in town, and he pops up a lot just in the background and has no speaking parts.
Yeah.
She pulls up to the Lake Lodge, the Lake Lodge, and once she enters the lodge, she is enthusiastically greeted by her bestie, Ava, whose nickname could be enthusiastically because halfway through this movie, I lost count of how many times she squealed and jumped up and down. She was the exact opposite of a bridezilla. They happily hug, and Ava gushes, "My two favorite things, Christmas and my wedding! Squee!" Ava asks Lacey if she'll go to the college with her to drop off some stuff, and fucking Lacey, she doesn't say, "Oh my god, it's been so long since I've seen you. I can't wait to go with you and get some alone time before everyone descends. Besties unite!" Boop, boop, doo. No. She says, "I was kind of hoping to get some work done before the reception dinner." Ava, to her credit, says what's on her mind, which is, "I was kind of hoping that this trip would be a work-free zone for you." Lacey takes a moment and then says, "Yeah, I'm sure I can fit it in somewhere else. Let me just drop my stuff off in my room." And the duo goes up to Lacey's room, and Ava takes this opportunity to ask her how things with Roger are going. Lacey confirms, "Things are great. We get along. He's handsome and successful, and it essentially is my perfect man checklist." Ava says, "You talk about him like he's an essential dietary supplement. Where's the passion?" To which Lacey responds, "I was into passion in high school, but I much prefer Roger's predictability and reliability over passion. We have sex every Wednesday, missionary style, at exactly 8:15 p.m.
This is a Hallmark movie. I'm sorry, nobody's having sex before marriage.
But she likes his predictability and reliability, so I assume that's probably something that goes on behind closed doors.
Okay.
They have sex the same time, the same position, every Wednesday, 8:15 p.m.
Sounds good.
Okay. If this wasn't a Hallmark movie, that's what they would do.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Because in Hallmark movies, we don't have sex before marriage.
Correct.
They head back out to the lodge's lobby, and Ava excitedly scampers towards a hot guy, Ian, with an E. She squeals. Lacey looks over at the guy, and the color leaves her face, but she's quickly distracted by Aunt Sarah, who is like a mom to her after her own mom died. And in this scene, we find out that Ian and Lacey used to date, but Ian, who currently works as a traveling chef and didn't even know if he was going to be at his sister's wedding, was a commitment phobe, and Lacey wanted more than, "I don't know, let's just see what happens," from her boyfriend.
Huh. Weird.
Both Lacey and Ian swear that there's not going to be an issue between one another, but both of them are shook. I say shook from seeing each other. And I must ask Corinne, because Ava's husband is Ian's friend, yeah, and they embrace and greet and whatever. Is it a Hallmark trope for the best friend to always be shorter than the main man?
Oh, I don't. No, I don't think so, because remember when we watched the Lacey Chabert cottage movie?
Which one?
Where she inherits the cottage from her auntie, and along
which
with
one?
A stockbroker who is...
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he makes fast friends with the local hardware store guy, oh, who is a giant.
Yes. Okay. Okay. But I mean, I think he's the exception, not the rule. Because mostly when I see these movies, the best friend is a little bit smaller and a little bit less attractive, conventionally speaking, from the main man.
Oh, man. That hardware guy is hot and he is tall.
Wrong movie. Wrong movie, Corinne. Bring it back in. We're at the Christmas cottage.
Christmas cottage. Right, right, right. Okay. And we are at the Christmas cottage because Ava and Lacey, that's their friend's name, Avi. Ava and Lacey head to the cottage, and the two reminisce about childhood visits to the cabin together. Ava says, "Remember when we used to pretend this place was a castle?" Lacey smiles softly. "Yes, forks and spoons were wands, and the glasses were magical crystals." They look around the cabin nostalgically, and Ava mentions the legend of the Christmas cottage. "There's magic around here during Christmas. I can feel it. Anyone who has stayed here during Christmas time has found true love." Lacey is dubious, but Ava lays down the proof. And as we say here at One Dry Kiss, the proof is in the needlepoint.
No, it's not.
That isn't what we usually say. If it's like embroidered on something, it's needlepointed, then it's the truth.
Do we say that?
Oh,
Are we starting to say that now? Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
Because Lacey looks at a framed needlepoint that says, "Whoever spends a Christmas night behind this door will have true love forevermore." Excuse me. "Whoever spends a Christmas night behind this door will have true love forevermore." As Ava explains, "My great-grandmother pretended she wasn't in love with my great-grandfather until they spent the night here one Christmas and woke up to find they were deeply in love." And I ask, is this Christmas cottage magic, or did great-grandma get some really good dick asking for a friend?
I vote dick. Yeah. I vote yes.
Yeah.
They had premarital sex, and she was like, "Oh, my lands and stars. What is this? Oh, I love you."
It must be Wednesday at 8:15. Hey. Ava continues, "My grandparents spent their wedding night here and woke up more deeply in love. Deeply in love. And then, you know how loving and wonderful Aunt Sarah's marriage was." Ava looks around the cottage, her eyes filled with wonder. "And soon, Mason and I will find the same magical happiness."
See, now I just want to test that theory out, because if somebody told me that, I'm like, what are the chances that these people were already in good relationships before they stayed at the cottage, and then they just use that to reinforce their own beliefs? Like, I want to put some problematic relationships in there and see if they're magically cured once they, like, spend the night behind that door.
Oh, maybe I should have spent a night at the Christmas cottage with my ex instead of breaking up with him.
Yeah. To see if it fixed everything.
Sure.
Test that hypothesis.
No, we
don't. And if it rings true, sweet baby Jesus, the money you'd get from Airbnb rentals.
Only during one period of time of the year.
Oh, but you can charge exorbitant amounts of money for that one day. Or you can just do like a group rate. Like everybody can come in and try to cram into that room. No, we're not having an orgy.
It's a Christmas cottage orgy. Yes.
No, it's not a Christmas cottage orgy.
And you know what's going to happen is that some of those couples that were together actually aren't meant to be together. They end up with other people from other couples, and they find their true love that way.
I just don't know how we turned this Hallmark movie into a porn all of a sudden. Wow.
You know, it's the magic of the Christmas cottage, Tamara.
I guess so.
It can't be denied.
No, it can't.
Ava is going to spend her honeymoon at the cottage because, gosh darn it, she's making sure their love lasts. Ava thanks, and she will not be inviting other people into their special wedding night, just FYI, for additional love. Ava thanks Lacey for taking over the decorating of the place for her, as she's so busy with other wedding stuff and she wants some Christmas magic in there. Christmas magic! And so, when Lacey lets it slip that she has an ultra-modern theme planned, Ava puts the brakes on that right quick. "I want things to be colorful and there to be a big, fresh-cut tree in here like when we were kids." Lacey's vision of a sophisticated Christmas ensemble is dashed, and Ava assures her, "It's fine if you mix in some of the modern, but I want cozy, colorful, and a real tree."
Oh my gosh, that sounds like me and you. I'm the Lacey and you're the Ava.
Mm-hmm.
So we want neutral tones and sophisticated palettes. No, I want colors and lights and colors and fun stuff and cozy and hygge.
Yeah, hygge. And I'm also all about like squealing and enthusiasm and...
and you're like, all about work.
Yeah. Let's work over the holidays. And I'm like, I get a week off between Christmas and New Year's.
Oh, fuck right off. I don't want to work over the holidays. If I could have a week off, boy, howdy, would I. I could have a week off, but that would take up my whole vacation time for the year. So, no. Anyways, back at the lodge, Lacey has a romantic conversation with Roger in her room. They talk about things like the sexy new deal and being ready for the new deal and what's going to happen during the deal.
Oh,
just kidding. They're talking shop. And once Roger is clear that Lacey has a handle On her end of things, he quickly ends the conversation. Kate thinks, bye! And Lacey feels a little bit frustrated at their lack of intimacy. She heads out of her room to go down to dinner and finds out that Ian is staying next door. He mentions that he heard she had a boyfriend, and she quickly affirms, stating how amazing he is. Ian says, I'm happy for you. It must work well working with him since you're all about work.
Work, 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 work. Yes.
Lacey responds, I'm actually about balancing both. Ian bites back, I think in general, people who prioritize relationships are happy with the unspoken, unlike you. Lacey raises her eyebrows at the implied dig at her and responds, well, I'm not like somebody who bolted halfway around the world when he felt like he wasn't the sole focus of my life.
Ha!
Ian's smiling facade falls away and he says, I never wanted to be the sole focus of your life, but I wanted to be a part of your life, and I felt like I was frequently pushed aside, so I'm glad you found someone who sees the relationship the same way you do. But has she? Ian walks off, leaving the two of them alone with their unresolved issues with each other. That evening at the welcome party, Aunt Sarah says a few words. Thank you all for coming during Christmas. As you know, it's a tradition in our family to get married on Christmas Eve and spend our honeymoon in the family cottage. It brings happiness and good fortune to the family. I've always believed in the magic of the cottage, and it brought George and I 34 years of happiness until he passed. Unfortunately, the cabin doesn't have powers of healing and resurrection, but we'll forgive it for its one fault. She toasts Ava and Mason, and we cut to a bit later when Lacey starts heading up to her room. Ava stops her, hands her the key to the cabin so Lacey can decorate it tomorrow, and reminds her to think Christmas, twink, a.k.a. colorful when decorating. Okay. I've been waiting this whole time for this part to take a stance that getting married on Christmas is a horrible idea because everyone who has a birthday even remotely close to December 25th knows that if you have a special event or holiday near Christmas, that just rolls into a present combo where you get your anniversary gift and your Christmas gift all rolled up into one.
Okay. I don't think the anniversary gifts are that big of a deal. So I'm like... Sure. You get extra vacation time around that holiday so you can go on little anniversary trips. I think it sounds like a good plan.
Okay, so you don't see the merit in my present argument? Then what about this? They're having Christmas in the cottage, cozy with fireplace, trees, ornaments, warm fuzzy blankets, yada, yada, yada.
Sounds amazing.
You know, it's a Hallmark movie. Eventually, they're going to have kids. So this... somewhat could potentially be sexy holiday where we're going to be all cozied up in the cabin doing God knows what with the toys we find under the tree is going to turn into catering to the kids and making it special for them and making Christmas magic without even probably paying any mind that it's also your anniversary.
Just celebrate it on New Year's. It works out that way too.
See? I've convinced you then.
No.
Having your anniversary on... You're saying having the celebration on New Year's?
Yeah, why not? Like, you're close enough to New Year's where you can just kind of bop it on over a week. It's not a big deal. My birthday's in the beginning of October. My parents once celebrated my birthday the first week of November because of scheduling. So, you know, I'm like, a week later, works fine, just as long as it's intentionally done.
And it's not truly your anniversary. I'm just saying.
So...
You know how sentimental these fuckers are in Hallmark movies. That would probably be a big deal. You are not, like, in that Hallmark Christmas realm, Corinne. You're an enigma. You're a unicorn.
I don't care. I don't care if it's done on the day of. It just needs to be done, period, at some point in time. It needs to be acknowledged and planned for and loved on. And if it's, like, a week later, that's not a problem.
I'm trying to coordinate that craptastic workload in the middle of a Christmas sandwich just sounds like a hot mess to me. Just saying. That is my hill and I will die on it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So no Christmas wedding for you. Got it.
Mm-mm. No. New.
She's going to be having an outdoor wedding in the middle of July in Los Angeles. It's going to be incredible.
I want an autumn wedding.
Ooh, there you go. Best. Yes.
Thinking October 6th.
Okay, great. I'll always remember your anniversary. It'll be perfect. That's the day after my birthday, gentle listeners.
See, but it's not like right on the birthday. It's like Christmas Eve and Christmas, like my anniversary and your birthday.
It's perfect.
We'll see whose celebration gets pushed back for whatever reason.
I had a couple of friends of mine get married on my birthday. And I was like, thank you for throwing this great birthday party for me. This is awesome. I went to their wedding and had a fantastic time.
Did you cut the cake without them knowing? Be like, but it's my special day. It's my special day.
I brought candles to stick in the wedding cake. Happy birthday to me.
You just scooch the bride and groom figurines apart to put your fucking like 35 in between them. Your 35 candles.
You don't know me. Yeah, I would totally do that. No. Mm-hmm. So after Tamara has very convincingly stated her argument against Christmas weddings, and I have just ignored the whole argument entirely because
you're devil's advocate.
Christmas is the most romantical time of year. It's totally true. Me and Ava, we know. The next day, Lacey heads to the cabin and she's about to open the door and grab all of her packages of stark white lights and decor when she is hit with a snowball. And it's Ian with an E. Womp, 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 womp. He informs her that he's there to help. Then Mason, the groom, asked him to. Lacey's vision of spending blissful time alone decorating in the cabin is dashed. And she's right, because next thing we know, Ian and Lacey are at Walla. Excuse me. We're renaming it Owala after our water bottles. Owala, yes. Christmas tree farm. And Lacey is quite happy to choose a pre-cut tree from the barn, but Ian insists on them cutting their own from the back of the lot. It is a family tradition, after all. Lacey starts fussing with her phone, and Ian proposes, why don't you just do whatever business thing you're doing, and I'll get the tree? Lacey isn't having it. Absolutely not. One, I'm not doing work, merely setting a timer for when we need to be done at the cottage and finding a YouTube video on efficiently cutting down trees. And two, I know you'll find the scrawniest, Ian counters, unique, Lacey continues, mangiest, Ian says, character filled, and Lacey finishes, saddest looking tree, and I'm not having it. They walk the lot. A lot full of trees filled with bubbles. I mean snow. Snow. That's it.
It's a white magical Christmas, goddammit.
Uh-huh.
Nothing says Christmas like packing peanuts.
Lacey finds the perfect tree and insists on cutting it herself because of watching the video and now being an expert because, as we know from watching the White Savior documentary, if you've watched a video on doing it, you are an expert.
What reference is that?
There's a young white woman who goes to Africa and she opens a clinic for African children. And she watches videos on how to give them medical care and feels like her hands are guided by God. Yeah.
Oh. Mm. Uh-huh. Did God put any of those children, or did God's hands put any of those children in danger during this documentary?
You know, I would say that it's a complicated subject, but yes.
That's a yes.
Anyways, now being an expert, as one is after they've watched a singular YouTube video, she may be efficient at cutting a tree, but she is about to have the tree crash on top of her until Ian swiftly pulls her out of harm's way. And as the tree crashes down, narrowly missing them, she finds herself wrapped in Ian's arms.
Are you kidding me? They made it seem like he was pushing her out of the way of a speeding bus. It was a Christmas tree and not a very Christmas tree. And it was kind of like leaning towards her. And I was like, he like grabs her like, oh, Lacey. And like swoops her out of the way. And I was like, I have had a Christmas tree and a person holding the Christmas tree fall on top of me. She's going to be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fine.
I know. I'm like, there's really worse things than having a reasonably sized Christmas tree fall on top of you. It's okay. Particularly when it's not from any kind of great height. It's just toppling there, over at floor level. Yeah. But
it almost leaned on her and got her sappy, Corinne.
Look, Ian with an E rescued her, okay?
Hi.
Saved her from having, you know, a Christmas tree land on her. Oh no! Oh no!
That hits her in the right spot in the head, and she gets Christmas amnesia and completely forgets why she's there. And so Ian has to remind her of why they fell in love. Oh, wait, wrong movie. Sorry.
I was going to say, that's a different Hallmark movie, Tamara. Jeez.
I'm sure it is. I was just stabbing in the dark, but I'm sure there's one out there like that.
Okay, there's multiple of those Hallmark movies, but we're not going to go into that right now. We have a Christmas cottage, a magical Christmas cottage to return to. Lacey is wrapped in Ian's arms. Wait a minute. There's touching in a Hallmark movie? What? Well, there is when one is being rescued or ice skating, and this falls under the first one. Lacey and Ian take the bubble snow-filled tree back to the cabin along with some groceries for Mason and Ava for when they stay there. See, I think Ian is pretty much the perfect man for you, Tamara, because he's like, oh, we are not leaving Ava and Mason in that cabin without artisanal snackies. You know, he got the nice wine, he got the olives, like he got the good cheese. Like,
if they're spending their honeymoon there instead of going to like Bora Bora or Fiji or some other warm, like other magical place, then they better have some good fucking food.
Mm-hmm. And Ian is making sure of it. After Lacey has put away the groceries, taking a moment to look fondly at the Ian and Lacey heart carved in the back of the cupboard, and Ian has put up the tree, Lacey starts unpacking her white twinkle lights to create a vision of a winter wonderland. She glances at her phone to see that she has a little over an hour and a half left to work on things before returning to the lodge. She sets down her phone to unwind the lights when, unbeknownst to her, a winter weather alert pops up on her phone. There's a blizzard headed this way.
So, this
top-rated Christmas Hallmark Christmas movie here.
Right. No, I'm not arguing that point. I'm just saying, Ava wanted this to be a work-free weekend for Lacey, and yet she's been in this cottage like decorating for her fucking honeymoon for like half the day. And it's not decorating anything for the wedding reception. She's not helping the bride with anything wedding related. She is in a cabin decorating it.
A love cabin. A magical love cabin.
A love cabin. But then a little later, she's over there like cleaning it, like dusting off the mantle of the fireplace. And I'm like, what the fuck? Just at least get somebody in there to hire to clean up so your bestie doesn't have to do it. Like, aren't you supposed to be spending time together, Ava and Lacey? Am I wrong?
Ava seems to be spending a lot of time with Mason, her soon-to-be hubbies.
Okay. If you did that to me, Corinne, I'd be very upset. But I don't think you ever would.
No.
Because you never have a Christmas marriage, because I wouldn't let you. And does anybody present object to this marriage? Me! God damn it. We need to wait like a week for New Year's, because it's the more appropriate time to celebrate and have a party. I'm just saying.
Tamara, best friend of mine, when I get married, I want you to come 5 days early so that you can spend time away from me, making sure that my love nest is ready for me. Thank you.
Exactly what's fucking happening. And it is bizarre. This is bizarre. And the amount of time, like, okay, I'm going to pause and just go through this next section. Because, yeah. Some time passes and Lacey and Ian have created white twinkle light paradise and filled the tree with ornaments as well. And I hard nope right the fuck out of that description, Corinne, that you wrote, because it looks like that tree got flocked after the ornaments were put on. Everything is white and so bland. Lacey's pleased with the job well done, but Ian is looking out for Ava's best interest and brings down the box of family ornaments. Lacey protests, "The tree's perfect!" And Ian points out, "There's no color on that tree!" Lacey rebuts, "Technically, that's not true. There's eggshell, solar, chantilly." Ian sighs, "Those colors are so boring and all the shades of white. You know, if Ava had a choice between Christmas sophistication and Christmas explosion, she'd choose..."
Christmas explosion! Christmas explosion! Christmas explosion!
This is not your party, Corinne. He trails off, giving her a look, and Lacey begrudgingly agrees. Christmas explosion, I know. Okay, we can put up some of your family ornaments. So then, after they decorate the tree and put the snacks in, like, what the fuck else is there to do? They Christmas cozy it up. Can they leave now? No, apparently they're not done yet. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. Back at the lodge, Mason informs Ava, the soon-to-be couple, excitedly that there is snow in the forecast and she's going to get her white Christmas. Ava's very happy about that and says, I'll text Lacey and let her know, which she does. But Lacey doesn't see her phone because she's busy decorating the tree with Ian. And it apparently takes 16 hours to do. Ian puts out a heart ornament with a young Ian and Lacey together in the photo in the center. And Lacey looks at it nostalgically, but suggests putting it back in the box so things won't be awkward. Ian quickly agrees. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was just showing it to you because I thought you'd like to see it. Sure, Ian. Sure. They finish up with the tree and look at their phones before they head back to the lodge, only to see the text in the weather advisory. Lacey looks outside at the snow falling and thinks there's hope for getting back to the lodge, but Ian disagrees, showing her his phone with a more current weather advisory saying that the roads are closed. Looks like they're spending the night in the cabin. What'd you say? Two unmarried people under one roof? Watch out, Hallmark. Who knows what will happen? And then also, Lacey's very upset that she doesn't have her computer to work because she left it at the hotel. And as a person who works predominantly on their computer, I call bullshit because I bring that shit everywhere.
Same.
Especially, right? Like, does she have like one of those early 1990 models that take up like a whole desk and then some? Like, was there a reason why she couldn't bring it with her?
No, because I would have been like, oh, you know, if I need to take a break from decorating and I just want to like do a little bit of work in between, I'll be in this lovely cottage. I can watch the snow fall.
Absolutely.
Like, whatever. Right. I bring my fucking computer with me everywhere because I'm like, maybe I can sneak in some editing in different moments in time.
I know, because you never know when you're going to get like delayed at an airport or stuck in a Christmas cottage behind a snowstorm, or I don't know, like, say you're at a festival and two of the main guests are getting verbally assaulted and some of the events get canceled, so you have the latter half of the day free. I'm just spitballing here.
Just spitballing. Nothing like that would have ever happened to us, though.
No. But I mean, you just want to have your computer handily ready in case something does. Just say it.
Seriously. That moment when she was like, I don't have my computer with me. I was like, what? Why don't you have your computer with me? I take it everywhere with me in the backpack.
Especially because you don't know if they have Netflix at the Christmas cottage. And you know what you could do? You could watch Netflix on your computer if you don't want to work.
Seriously.
Amateur. Seriously. Well, Roger calls Lacey, who pretends everything is okay and she's got the blueprints almost done. Sure she does, even though her computer is back at the lodge. Roger briskly says, okay, miss you. Okay, I've got to take this call. Bye. And hangs up the phone. Oh, Roger, you're such a romantic. Ian tries to help things by saying Tamara's favorite word of all time. Relax. And handing her some jammies to change into. Later that evening, as they eat Ava and Mason's honeymoon snacks and drink their wine in front of the fire, the power goes out. What? No power means no heat, which means they will both be bunking down in the living room on separate couches, of course. They grab their blankets and get settled on their respective sofas, reminiscing in the semi-darkness as the fire flickers, cracks, and pops in the background. Lacey remembers how they went camping several times together and says, those are some of my fondest memories. I've never been more cold, but spending that time exploring with you was worth it. Ian agrees, those were good times. I just wish we could have gone to the Caribbean like we planned. I worked back-to-back weekends for months to save enough money for that trip, but then you got that summer internship. Lacey continues, and I had to cancel to go to New York. Ian affirms, yeah, I was disappointed, but supported your decision. Lacey chuckles wryly. That's what you remember. Ian looks at her sadly. I'm sorry if I made you feel bad about it. But she shakes her head. No, we just had different goals and wanted different things. That became pretty clear to me when you accepted a job 3,000 miles away without even telling me you applied for it. Lacey says goodnight softly to Roger and turns her back to him, pretending to sleep.
Speaking of sleeping, Lacey does actually wake up. If she didn't, there would be a problem. This would be a much sadder Hallmark Christmas movie.
I'm going to fold in some true crime comments at the end. Go ahead.
In the morning, Lacey wakes up to Roger cooking for her in the kitchen. Yay! He's making a delicious frittata, but when he goes to pour the coffee, he overpours, and the both of them quickly wipe up the coffee, their hands touching. They look into each other's eyes and pause a moment before Lacey interrupts the moment, announcing, "We should get going. I have a dress fitting to get to." So they wrap things up and head back to the lodge.
Okay. You did not say that the reason why he overpoured the coffee is because the minute he tips the carafe to put it in her cup, he starts hard staring at her like he would put Bella and Edward to shame with the stares that he was giving her. He was like, poor, like, just feel it. Like, the stares were radiating off of him. So he was so caught up in the stares that he overpoured the coffee.
I've got to say, it was like the most forced coffee overpour that I've ever seen in a movie.
Yes. It was very forced. And I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, you... It made me a little bit nervous for Lacey's safety. That's all I'm saying. The intensity that he was gazing at her made me think that he was wondering where he could put a shallow grave in the back of the cottage.
See, now this is where the Christmas plan is a bad idea, because you're dealing with frozen ground and it's harder to...
Yeah. Definitely love the thought you put behind that, Corinne.
Thank you.
You can't kill anybody in the winter, and you can't bury the body, silly.
See, getting married in the wintertime gives you a little bit more time, a little more wiggle room before you get offed. So, just saying.
Yeah. I think I'd probably want to off a few of my relatives if I got married at Christmas.
Later, Lacey ends up in a Hallmark Lace TM red one-shouldered maid of honor dress that Tamara describes as...
It almost looks like a material version of a shuttlecock, because it's super tight around her chest and then it kind of flares into a crepey like outskirt. But maybe the shuttlecock like drifted through spiderwebs, hence the lace over one shoulder, which is an interesting choice.
And a shuttlecock is like a is that a badminton birdie?
Oh yeah, the badminton thing. The okay. Badminton birdie, yeah.
Perfect. No,
it looks like a badminton birdie. A cross between that and a fruit roll up. All of that together with a fruit roll up.
It definitely was a red fruit roll up color for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So after trying on the dress, Lacey steps out into the hall. She's still wearing the dress and sees Ian. She asks him if she looks ridiculous. Tamara and I say yes, but he assures her, "You look beautiful," as he stares softly into her eyes. Lacey sees his bow tie hanging around his neck and deftly ties it, as she's been doing it since the age of 10 for her dad. Lacey and Ian stare softly with hard eyes at each other. She stares, he stares, they stare, and it just may be love. That evening, during the wedding rehearsal, Ava and Mason practice their wedding dance. Ava announces to the group of family gathered round, "So for our wedding dance, we'd like to start off dancing and then have the maid of honor and the best man join us." That's Lacey and Ian with an E for those in the back. "And then the rest can enter. Let's give it a try." Ava and Mason start dancing, shortly joined by Ian and Lacey, and then the rest of the group. As Ava and Mason stumble around, Ian spins Lacey out, pulls her back, and dips her. They are ready for Dancing with the Stars, and Ava delights in their dancing while laughing at her and Mason's struggle. After the rehearsal, Lacey and Aunt Sarah, to be clear, not Lacey's actual aunt, that would make her and Ian related, which is not really what we want in a romance. Aunt Sarah gives Lacey a bit of food for thought, asking her if San Francisco is where she belongs and suggesting that when someone has a genuine smile on their face, that's where they really belong. Here, not in San Francisco with a business partner as a romantic partner.
So what I'm guessing is she's referring to Lacey and all her wide, genuine smiles that she's been having recently since she's spent the night at the Christmas cottage with Ian with an E.
Well, you know, getting some good dick will give you a nice big smile.
They did not get dick. She got a frittata, not a dick, Corinne.
You know what? I'll take a frittata. Thank you very much.
Frittata is my nickname for Larry's dick. Don't ask why.
I'm just trying to figure it out. But I shouldn't. I should not. I will not go into that dark night.
I'm just kidding. It's not.
Really?
I was trying to think of all kinds of ways to spin that into something positive, and I could not. It smells like eggs. No, that's not good. It's a weird texture. No, also not good.
Yeah.
Once Lacey's done with her chat, she heads back up to her room and starts working on the blueprints again. After a while, Ava comes by and excitedly asks to come in and chat. Lacey happily lets her in, but when Ava broaches the topic of how happy Lacey looks hanging out with Ian, Lacey shuts that shit down. We're having a nice time together, but, she says as Ava's face lights up, we're just friends enjoying each other's company, nothing more. Just then, there's a knock on the door, and it's Ian. He asks Lacey if she's up for having him prepare lunch for her, and Corinne says, yes, please.
And I'd love for you to cook for me. Thanks, Ian. Thanks.
Lacey just smiles happily. And I have questions because Ava's just like smiling like, you guys go ahead and have food. But I'd be like, I would try to roll myself into that invitation because it's her brother that hasn't been home for years. And he is a self-described world-renowned famous chef. And he's making lunch just for Lacey. Just for Lacey. Nobody else. None of the other guests, nobody in the hotel, not his sister. Wouldn't you just invite yourself right on to the, I don't care if they're getting along and they might be making hard eyes at each other. Fuck that. I'm inviting myself to lunch.
Ava is trying to foster their romance, and so she does not want to get in the way of it. But, you know, I do think that you have a point. I personally, if my sibling came into town and was like, I'm going to cook this delicious food, and I'm the person who's, particularly because I'm the person who's supposed to be being celebrated because, hello, Christmas magic wedding.
Right. Thank you.
I would be like, okay, and you just make some extra for me. I don't need to sit at the table with the both of you, but, you know, just, yes, I want some of
so
that.
It's so funny actually that you say that, Corinne.
Oh.
Let me continue.
Okay.
And we next see her in the dining area with Ian, who serves her a miso glazed turkey with a gochujang green beans and roasted yams. Lacey happily takes a bite and declares, ugh, I'd elope with this plate if I could. Ian smiles happily and confesses, I haven't been home around Christmas in years, and being here now has got me thinking about putting down roots back home. But then, the thought of cooking the same dishes over and over again has me applying for jobs in Finland that start right after Christmas. Lacey's brain hamster starts working on the wheel, and ding! She realizes she may have a solution for Ian. She pulls out a pad of paper and a pencil, and I suddenly realize that Lacey and I have a lot in common, as I too carry around art supplies with me everywhere I go. That was from Corinne.
Yes. It's true.
I was like, wait, I do, but mostly a computer. But same. Lacey starts drawing and talking. What if you had your own restaurant, but one that had a limited and different menu each week, like a pop-up restaurant that's always in the same place? Corinne says that she sketches out a cute building with a sign outside that says Ian's Cafe, and Tamara says that she sketched technically another metal box, which is what her first houses looked like, except this one didn't have an awning. She is well-versed in drawing boxes. Decorating them nicely, but
on the hillside.
Her newfangled house looked like a box. This restaurant also looks like a box. Ian is intrigued, and after all the work, Lacey is hopeful when she points to the last silver dome on the food tray that Ian is carrying and asks, what's that? He swipes the lid off the last plate and states, my world-famous Christmas dessert, a cranberry gingerbread souffle with bourbon molasses sauce.
So you just said gingerbread?
I like it.
It's full of the bad bios.
Gingerbread. Gingerbread. It's like halfway between Halloween and Christmas. It's gingerbread.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Gingerbread. Souffle with bourbon molasses sauce. She takes a bite and happily munches away on her sublime dessert, completely leaving aside the food that she took one bite of just a moment before. And see, Ava could have tagged along and he wouldn't even be put out because they could have shared the same plate because fucking Lacey took one bite and then started eating the dessert.
Tamara's giving me like a look of superiority.
I am not. I'm it just says, like, okay.
See?
Because A, she doesn't appreciate the food apparently. And she might be one of those just broads. It's like, I'm just going to take one bite. Oh my God, I'm so full. Okay, that's fine. But like then I
had assumed some time had passed between.
No, the food was right there. 2 inches away. She took a bite. They said the things. They started eating the dessert. And she's like, you better pick up a fork and dig in on this and help me or else I'm going to finish it all by myself. So they were going to finish the dessert together while she had her food just chilling mere inches away.
Well, you all know that the dessert should go first.
Such a Hallmark defender, Corinne.
There are some things that are unforgivable in this movie that just cannot be defended.
Okay. To me, that's one of them. And the second one is Christmas wedding. And they were only like halfway through. And I'm already like, nope, nope, nope.
This section I entitle, Oh, Roger. After Ian with an E and Lacey are done with their meal, they make a pit stop at the Christmas fair for seasonal drinks and wreath making in true Hallmark style. They return to the lodge with Lacey triumphant after conquering the wreath. Ian sees Santa sitting in the lobby and says to Lacey, you know, I haven't seen you this happy since you've been here. I think this afternoon will be perfect if we top it off with a visit from Santa. She reluctantly but happily visits. Oh, why doth thou scoffest?
Because nothing says sexy at Christmas like a visit to Santa. You're talking about Christmas being the sexiest time of year? I'm like, oh yeah.
I didn't say sexiest time of year. The most Santa. Romantic time of year.
Okay, well then nothing says romance then. Like a visit from Santa.
Exactly, because you can ask him for what you want. Your cute little picture. He's so cute.
Sitting on an old man who's a stranger's lap just doesn't appeal to me as romantic.
Oh, I'm not saying it was romantic when my sister and I did it, but it was a lot of fun.
Okay.
We have a picture of us as adults with Santa. It's very cute. And you can't say otherwise because she's dead.
Okay. I'm sure that Bridget would agree with me that it's not super romantic to sit on Santa's lap with your sister.
Well, that is
fun. Yes. Yeah. Romantic. No,
no, no. I will agree with that. There was no romance between me and my sister.
Well, see, I'm just saying, hence family get togetherness, fun. That's Christmas, not romance, not marriage, not a fucking Christmas cottage that you're going to lose your in and live happily ever after.
I think it's very sweet. Anywho, this is a cute Santa. It's not a super scary looking Santa like a lot of the Hallmark Santas are. Regardless, Tamara and I differ on on this opinion.
He's very ruddy complected, though. It reminded me of that one time I posted that picture of you on Instagram, but I didn't save it in the correct color. I didn't save it in the right color profile. And you're like, I look like I have radiation poisoning. Why is my face so purple? I was like, oh, sorry about that. That's what Santa's face looked like.
I was.
It was ruddy as fuck.
When I sent you that picture, I was like, oh yeah, I think this should be fine. And then I saw it. I was like, did I send her a picture that looked like that? No, I did not.
No.
Oh, Corinne the Lobster. I do get red flush, but typically
not that red flush. You were so red you were practically purple. Just as Santa was.
I was gonna ask you to use some Photoshop or something because I was like, no, can't.
Oh no, sorry.
Can't
save it as CMYK instead of RGB, which is what I should have for for digital copy. Sorry.
Lacey reluctantly but happily visits Santa with Ian, and while posed next to Santa for the pic, she sees Roger. She had originally been planning on going to the town tree lighting that evening with Ian, but that plan is likely dashed. So, Roger explains that he didn't come up there early to spend quality time with his sweetie. No, this was no romantic gesture. He came up early so that he and Lacey could work together because he has had a great idea. They should build a model for the presentation. He says, there's nothing like being able to physically see what you're talking about. And I'm like, didn't two of the potential clients go on a physical walkthrough of a life-size model house at the beginning of the movie, asking for a friend? Because that seems like a whole lot more convincing than a foam core model.
No, once you see it in miniature, you can fully get the scope.
Oh, okay.
Also asking for a friend. Didn't fucking Roger say that he had the plans back with him wherever the hell he was? Or did Lacey yet draw? No, he had the plans because they had a fucking building already erected. Like, why couldn't he just do that shit himself? Why is he like, I needed to fly across the country to come interrupt you and your festivities so you could help me with some arts and crafts?
That we will then have to take on the plane back with us.
Ooh. Oh, my God. Yes. That is not going to fit in your carry-on. I'm sorry.
Nope. Don't worry, though. Roger has reserved the library for them to work together. And so together, they cut and glue together a beautiful modern-looking home. But when Lacey puts a little model Christmas tree in the building, Roger is not having it. We need a clean, spare look. Lacey assesses the model and says, you know, I'm not sure if this works anymore. It's just so sterile.
Just like you, Roger.
Oh! It's not Wednesday at 8:15, so yes. Sorry, Roger. Roger surprisingly bursts into a Taylor Swift number saying, Lacey, you're just getting cold feet. You gotta shake it off, shake it off. This side of Roger.
Did he really?
No, surprises Lacey, but she also doesn't appreciate being told to shake it off. He did actually tell her to shake it off. However,
oh, fuck right off, Roger.
Yeah, seriously. She doesn't say anything and retreats into herself, telling Roger that she's going on a coffee run. While she's out with the coffees, she runs into Ian, and they make plans to go to the cabin in the morning to finish the last touches of decorating and to replenish the supplies that they ate. Ian tries convincing her.
What else do they have to do? What the hell else do they have to do to that cottage? They were there like a day between the 2 days they were there squooshed together. Like, what else is there to do?
A sex toy under every cushion in the house.
Oh, come on. Corinne, Christmas wedding. It's under the tree. The sex toys are under the tree.
Sorry. You're right. You are so right. Ian tries convincing Lacey to go to the tree lighting that Tamara eagerly anticipates in all Hallmark movies. The tree lighting that happens right before Christmas, right before Christmas. Giving town folk very limited time with the lit up tree in the center of town. Yay!
It's like a dark splotch in the center town square for 362 days a year. And then one or two days before Christmas, they decide to light it up. Then and only then can they marvel at the beauty of it. And then they shut it back down. Yes, it was a dark splotch for 3 weeks. You knew there were some lights and ornaments there, but we weren't going to show them to you. No, we weren't.
Nope. Not in all their glory.
Yeah, that's the Hallmark way.
Exactly. I'm glad you're finally getting on the Christmas tree lighting bandwagon, Tamara.
Don't they do it like Rockefeller Center? Don't they do it the day after Thanksgiving?
That would make sense.
Or something?
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either because I'm not a New Yorker.
I was going to say, I'm not a New Yorker. Lacey is saying no to going to the lighting until Ava and Mason show up, and Ava pleads with her. The rest of the party, the rest of the wedding party is going, and I would love to spend more time with you. The tree lighting is something we loved doing back together when we were younger. Lacey reluctantly says that she'll try to make it and returns back to the lodge library to work with Roger. However, as Roger and Lacey put the finishing touches on the building once again, Roger is miffed. Why are you putting color on the walls? They're supposed to be white. Lacey explains, I'm just trying to warm it up, make the place more cozy. But Roger insists that it's perfect as it is. Lacey then tells Roger about the tree lighting, and he is very Team Tamara. I don't understand tree lightings. Everyone gathers around and claps with when some lights got turned on. But Lacey holds firm. I used to love it as a kid. And you know what? I think I'm going. Want to come? But Roger is too serious for such things. Tamara's not too serious for such things. She just is like, hey, timing? What?
Yeah, thinks they should happen way earlier in the year than they do in Hallmark Town.
Yes, exactly. So Lacey decides to go without him. Yay, Lacey! And Roger wonders, what the fuck has gotten into Lacey? And I'd like to say Ian has, but it's a Hallmark movie, so the most that has happened between them are their naked hands touching while they clean up spilt coffee.
Which is second base in Hallmark Town.
Seriously. It's practically unprotected sex.
Oh my god. Did your fingers graze? What?
How scandalous.
That night at the tree lighting, Ava's thrilled to see Lacey, and Ian arrives with hot cocos for everyone, but Lacey, because he wasn't expecting her.
Yay, I love hot cocoa! Christmas time! Chicka, 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 chicka!
He tells her, oh, sorry, wait here and I'm gonna get you one. And Lacey, bold-ass motherfucker, flirtatiously tells him, oh, don't worry about it, we can share. And I'm like, dude, you have some clearing up to do with Roger before sharing a hot cocoa with hottie Ian, says Corinne. Emotional infidelity. Anywho, she doesn't listen to me or Corinne, and they share the cocoa.
They share the cocoa. Ooh. They really share the cocoa. Oh, no, not the cocoa.
The tree lights up in a very unspectacular manner.
Seriously.
And the crowd bursts into joy to the world, because of course they do. The emotional affair deepens after the tree lighting ceremony, and the foursome returns to the lodge. Lacey giddily suggests a nightcap, and Ava and Mason hit the dance floor in the bar while Lacey and Ian talk. That is, until the irresistible strains of a piano version of Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly come on. And, of course, Ian asks Lacey to dance. Didn't he sometimes say to him that scene that, I know this is your favorite song,
yes.
Deck the Halls.
Yes.
And she's like, that's my jam, boo. And yeah. They go out on the dance floor.
Let's have a romantic dance to Deck the Halls with Boughs of Holly.
Emotional infidelity, which Corinne will not have, because the whole thing makes her uncomfortable. And she thinks that Lacey needs to square things away with Roger, who gets a hard on for business deals instead of Lacey, which is fair. It's not 8:15 on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Ian and Lacey reminisce about the good times as they dance until Roger, dun, 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 interrupts the fun, showing up out of nowhere. Lacey immediately stops dancing, looks a little guiltily at Roger, who's giving Ian with an E the stink eye, declaring he has finished work, suggesting that Lacey and him go get something to eat. Ian is shaking out of his dreamy Lacey fantasy, and Ava and Mason warmly greet him, inviting everyone out to s'mores. The dinner of champions.
I would be like, I gotta say, if I was working on some kind of a project and then I come downstairs to see my partner slow dancing with someone, I'd be like, hey, how about this?
What? You know what? There are the dogs outside are barking. I hope it doesn't. You know, sorry, gentle listeners, if you hear that. The neighbor's got a new dog. Yay. What I'm about is the fact that they're going to have s'mores for dinner. Lacey has a sweet tooth like nobody's business.
Yes.
Real food? Hell no. Let's eat s'mores. Lovely gourmet lunch? Mm-mm. I'm going to eat the souffle right here.
The gingerbread souffle, okay.
Gingerbread souffle, yes, indeed. Lacey suggests that she and Roger go with, but Ian ducks out because he's tired. So, sans Ian, the foursome heads to s'mores, while Ian heads off to bed, because fuck real food, am I right? Why eat dinner when you can have just s'mores?
You've got your grain with the graham cracker, you know.
Okay. I knew this was coming. Get your dairy with the chocolate.
Yes. See? It's like, it's a well-balanced meal. You've got some fiber going on. It's all good.
You got protein with the gelatin and the marshmallow.
There. See? This next section I entitled, What the Hell is Going On? And now I'm very curious because I don't remember what the hell's going on. So, The next morning, Lacey meets Ian outside and insists that she still wants to finish the cabin with Ian. Oh, now I know what the hell is going on. Emotional affair. So sexy, so romantic. Isn't it great?
What the heck do they still need to do in that cabin?
They need to fuck each other. That's what they need to do in that cabin.
They need to deck the halls, if you know what I mean.
Uh-huh, yeah.
They need to hang the stocking.
Winky, winky. Yes, that Ian got at the Christmas fair.
They need to have a white Christmas.
Ooh, a white Christmas. Well, gross. Okay, so Ian's face lights up. And they return to the love cabin, putting final touches on it. Ian asks, okay, is there anything else you think we should add? And Tamara says, no, there is nothing else you need to add to this fucking cabin. It is Christmas fine. It is good. It should have been done several hours ago. That's me just
speculating
guessing.
Wildly on my behalf.
Yes.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Okay, good. Thank you. Lacey looks around the room. It has beautiful white twinkle lights, along with a tree full of family decorations, stockings filled with candy on the tree-trimmed mantle, and beautiful red throw blankets on the couches. She happily replies, "It looks perfect." Ian responds, "Yeah, everything is pretty perfect, except for one thing. I was hoping we could try a little honesty." Lacey questions, "What do you mean?" He replies, "Let's talk." And Lacey agrees. They sit on the couch together and Ian, with balls of steel, says, "I'm talking about whatever is going on between us." Lacey scoffs and he continues, "Come on, I know you're feeling it too." She turns to him and half smiles. "Maybe it's being back here with all the memories." Ian is confused. Okay, now, and I just want to say, like, this scene, I understand, like, a lot of times women's friendliness is confused for interest. But I would say that Lacey was like throwing down heart eyes and giving long gazes and flirty looks. And it seemed
they
more
shared
than friendly.
A hot cocoa for fuck's sake.
Yeah. Where she was like, "Oh, we could share the cocoa together." "Oh, look, I got whipped cream on my nose. Oh, no." Yeah, it was. I'm just like, she was giving him the eyes and she was throwing down lots of signals as far as I was concerned. And it wasn't just her slutty, you know, khaki colored sweaters that she was wearing and slacks. So Ian confronts her about this and Ian is confused. And I feel like Lacey is gaslighting him. He asks, "Had good times? What about how we are having a good time?" Lacey responds aloofly, "Ian, it's great to see you, but that's all it is. Nothing more." Ian puzzles it over. "I thought we were vibing or that things were going in that direction." Lacey responds, "I have a life with Roger. We've put a lot of work into our relationships. You can't believe the Wednesday nights at 8:15 that we have together. I mean, they are something else. They last for a full 5 minutes. And I can't just give up on that." Ian's brow furrows. "Are you talking about Roger? Have you lost your virginity to him even before you got married? Or..."
Dun, dun, dun.
"Or are you talking about your career? Because they're not the same thing. And I was hoping you'd save yourself for me." Lacey says, "I think we just got caught up in old feelings being back at the cottage. That's all." Ian denies this. "What I'm feeling between us is more than just memories. My feelings have been there all along." Lacey plays it off. "Maybe all the fun we've been having has led to confusion." Ian protests, "I'm not confused. I can see this with clarity. Throughout all the countries I've been to, it's always felt like there was something missing. And after spending time with you this week, I realized it was you. It was always you." "But," he admits, as he's processing all of this, "you don't feel the same way. And once again, we want different things." He thinks about this further and says, "You have Roger, and I'm sorry. We should head back." What a mensch.
We're all sorry that she has Roger, Ian.
Yes, seriously. And they leave the cottage to go back to the lodge, but
We don't see that because the camera is too busy panning to the framed needle point. And as the Weird ODK says, if it's in needle point, then it's the truth.
I thought of a little needle point rhyme. I have to spin it back to the 1990s, though, because I wouldn't have this sick ass rhyme on a needle point today. It would say, one glass of wine is good, two is better. When I grow up, I'm going to marry Eddie Vedder.
Yes.
That is an excellent 90s anthem for you, for sure.
Thank you. Thank you. Although I wasn't drinking wine back in the 90s either. So it's like a mashup.
Yeah. I like it. A little bit of present day.
Mm-hmm. A little throwback.
Along with the past. Kind of like they're having this moment.
Oh, nice tie-in. Yeah.
The past and the present combined together.
A mashup.
I know.
Thanks.
So we see the needle point. That doesn't say one glass of wine, two is better. I see my future with Eddie Vedder that is on a tiny table. It once again says, whoever spends a Christmas night behind this door will have true love forevermore.
I think you need to roll a little more magic into that phrase, Corinne. Can you try it again, please?
Okay. Whoever spends a Christmas night behind this door will have true love forevermore.
Oh, yeah. Let's feel that one. Definitely.
Thank you.
When Lacey gets back to the lodge, she gets a very romantic text from Roger, which says, meet me outside. It demands, and so she does. He's standing outside looking at the snowy trees. She approaches and asks him, what's up? And he excitedly states that the account is basically a done deal. And then he hands her a small red box. What's in the box? We'll find out after this break. And we're back. Lacey holds the box and he excitedly states, open it, open it. She starts to say, Roger, I, as she opens the box, and then she trails off when she sees what's inside. Not a ring, but a snowflake necklace. Huh. Oh, Roger, you romantic, you. Roger says, a celebration gift. He kisses her and Lacey is relieved as fuck that he didn't propose. At the reception dinner, Lacey tries to push her relationship with Roger in a different direction, suggesting that they go on an adventure after dinner. But Roger isn't having it. He thinks they need to buckle down and focus to close that deal. Lacey expresses frustration to him over the fact that they only talk about work, 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 work. She wants work to end and for them to have a rich personal life outside of the office. But Roger doesn't agree. Meanwhile, Ian is sitting at the end of his table watching Lacey and Roger talk, but having no idea what they're saying. His sister Ava, who's sitting next to him, encourages him to actually stick around and not leave town. She says, stop running away for once and fight for what you want. Ian, with an E, much like Lacey earlier, pretends not to know what she's talking about, and eventually he gets up and heads back to the lodge. But when he puts on his jacket, the sketch that Lacey did for him of the box that has his restaurant's name on it falls out of his pocket and onto the floor. When Lacey gets up to go, she finds the drawing on the floor and assumes that Ian doesn't want it anymore. And by it, I mean her.
I just picture her being, she sees it and she's like, he must have been like, no, no more. Tossing it down on the ground, stepping on it a couple of times for good measure, being like, if Lacey doesn't want me, then I don't want this box with the name of my restaurant on it. Gosh darn it.
Damn straight. Damn the boxes. Damn them all to hell. No, that's not what happened, even though that's probably what's playing on in Lacey's mind if she has an active imagination like us. No, no. She just sadly sets the drawing down on a table at the restaurant before she also leaves.
Once Lacey and Roger get back to the lodge, he informs her that he's changed both of their flights to leave directly after the wedding. Like, the same day, directly after the wedding. Wow, Roger, how thoughtful. Tamara, what would you think if I was your maid of honor at your wedding and I had planned to stay longer, but my boyfriend changed my flight to leave a couple hours after the wedding was over?
So I have a few questions.
Yes.
Was it to get a life-saving surgery where time was of the essence, and he waited to the very last minute to get said surgery or else he would die, but chanced it because he knew how important it was for you to be with your best friend on her wedding day?
No. No, it would not be for that.
No, then fuck all. That's fucked up. Nope, would not accept it. Friend divorce happening now. And also, I'd probably kick him somewhere.
Please.
Where it would hurt a lot.
I would really appreciate you kicking Roger somewhere where it would hurt a lot. Like, who the fuck? Oh, no. No, honey. I just took it upon myself to change your reservation and shorten your stay.
And not only did you show up unannounced, but now you're trying to whisk me away from my best friend's once-in-a-lifetime, hopefully, wedding. Are you serious right now?
It doesn't even matter. Even if it isn't once-in-a-lifetime, what if she, like, this day is, like, special to her and it's meaningful. You want to be there for your bestie. Fuck off, yeah, Roger.
Fuck right off, Roger.
Lacey gets texted by Ava, and she tells Roger that she'll talk with him later and heads off to meet Ava. Why she doesn't tell Roger to fuck the fuck off, I do not know. But because you just changed my fucking flight? No.
Yeah.
Ava has hot cocoa waiting for her friend. Yay! And she checks in with Lacey about how she's doing. Lacey recaps her situation, lets Ava know that she's turned down Ian, and that she expects that things will return to normal with Roger after they get back into town. Ava is completely zen about the whole thing. Meanwhile, I would be majorly questioning my friendship if I was about to get married and my bestie spent all the time talking about herself and didn't ask me how I was doing before my big day.
Yes, seriously. Seriously.
I'm like, Melody. Okay. Yeah, so I just wanted to hang out with you a little bit before I get married. Well, I told Ian no, and Roger moved our flight up, and things are going okay, though, okay?
Yeah, I love my dress. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. How are you doing? How are you doing, Ava? Well, thanks for asking.
The catering's a mess, and I've really wanted to talk to you about it because I am at my wits end. And then you know what else Roger did? But Ava is a saint because the next day is Christmas Eve. Yay. Well, no, it's yay for Christmas Eve, but Ava and Mason are getting married. Yay.
Tamara's favorite wedding time, Christmas Eve.
That's just a bad idea all the way around. Lacey and Ian eye each other during the ceremony, and Roger checks his phone. At the reception after the wedding, Ava and Mason dance, and Ian and Lacey dance and talk with each other quite fancily. When Lacey asks him if he's thought about the restaurant more, he brushes it off as a pipe dream and says he's taking the job in Finland to make Carla
What's going on there?
Carla ya pasticci. Carla ya pasticci. Pasticci. Carla ya pasticci.
I don't think I read. I don't think I wrote that.
That is the national dish of Finland.
Oh.
It's a mixture of beef, pork, and lamb stew meat seasoned with peppercorn and allspice. Because that's what he'll be making when he gets there. I'm assuming.
Good research there, Tam.
Thanks.
I can tell you spent a long time listening to the pronunciation of that word, that Finnish word.
I even tried to put the letters to how they sound and completely botched it. Because I'm like, ah, shit, I don't know what the hell that's supposed to be.
I was like, what did I write? I don't remember this. Was I in some kind of like an altered state?
Yes, because it's spelled K-A-R-J-A-L-A-N, second word P-A-I-S-T-I. Paisji. Anyways, Lacey is shook, but she shouldn't be because she's the one who very clearly shut that shit down. But she has a short memory. During the toast phase of the wedding, Roger checks his watch and whispers to Lacey, I hope these toasts are fast. We need to pack for our flight. Fuck right off, Roger.
Fuck right
off. If you want to leave so soon, you go right ahead. I'm going to go spend the most fabulous wedding day with my bestie.
Seriously.
You can fuck right off. Anyways, Meanwhile, Ian gets up and waxes poetic about love, saying, "Real love is about knowing someone so well they feel like an extension of yourself." No, it's not true at all. I'd like to pause for a moment and say that sounds very codependent. Okay, carry on, Ian. He goes on, "You love each other exactly as they are without asking them to change." Okie dokie, okay. Hang on there, Ian. I know you have a lot of beliefs about love, and it's true you should accept people how they are, but sometimes, people need to adjust their behavior a bit for the other person in their life and vice versa. But please, Ian, continue with your wisdom. These are all Corinnisms, mind you. I'm just saying them very...
Do you disagree with me?
No.
Okay.
Okay, hold on a second. I just wanted to try to say it like Corinne would. That's all. I just left him as is to say Corinne verbatims. But please, Ian, continue with your wisdom. He does. And says, "You always put each other first, naturally and effortlessly." I'm going to have to stop you once again there, Ian. Relationships at work, while it's true they shouldn't be filled with drama or like climbing a mountain every day, relationships aren't effortless and need to be tended. They're acts of intentional thoughtfulness, not something that magically happens unless you fall asleep in a Christmas cottage.
Excellent addendum, Tamara. Thank you.
Ian and Lacey stare deeply at each other, their breath heavy as their eyes say, "I love you," to each other, but their hearts say, "I'm scared." Ian finishes his speech. "And then there's the person who you are privileged enough to be the only one that knows that part of them." Lacey and Ian know that they know each other's deepest depths, parts that no one else knows. Roger sees that Ian is staring and Lacey is staring and they are staring at each other and definitely not at him. However, Ian breaks the stare away to talk to his sister Ava and his now brother-in-law, because the speech is about them, right? Right?
Yeah.
Sure. And then Ian does a quick recovery and continues, "So to Ava and Mason, for loving all sides of each other naturally and effortlessly." I'm totally not talking about Lacey in this speech. No.
Oh, yeah. If only love is just natural and effortless.
Love is patient. Love is kind.
Then Lacey gives her speech. Love is patient. Love it. No, she doesn't. Which is way less problematic than Ian's. She states that when she got to the lodge for the wedding, she thought she knew what it would take to make a relationship work. Aligned goals and values. But after spending time with Ava and Mason, she realized that wasn't exactly true. At Christmas, people take a step back and examine what's really important. Okay, sitting in a darkened room with your Christmas tree lights on and listening to carols. That's what's really important. Thank you. But Lacey claims that it is friends, family, and love. That could be true, too. Ava and Mason have illustrated that love isn't simple. It's about disagreeing and agreeing, about loving someone enough to care about what they care about, hope for what they hope for, to help your person live the life they've always dreamed of. Real love is about giving. Lacey raises her glass. To Ava and Mason, may you always share in each other's hopes and dreams. Roger witnesses the whole thing, looking like he sucked on a lemon, and as soon as Lacey gets back to their table, he asks her if they can talk in private. Once they're in the present room, Roger confesses, in the room full of presents, Roger confesses, "I don't want to seem paranoid, or maybe I'm just being an idiot because we missed our Wednesday at 8:15 because you were here and I was back in San Francisco." Lacey looks at Roger sadly and says, "Roger, I'm sorry. While I can't pin down how I feel about Ian, I do know this. I need more than Wednesdays at 8:15. I also need something different in my life than what you're giving me. I need to be able to live a fuller life than work all the time, and I won't wait for things to change. I won't wait. I can't wait for happiness or love. We both deserve that." Roger asks, "What about work?" Lacey smiles. "I haven't put in all that time to throw away our deal. We work well together, and we should continue doing that. But in the new year, I want more balance in our office.
and I want to work on more than these big projects. I want to work with individuals who want homes that are square, very square. That's what we wanted when we were in college. And also, change the meeting to after the new year. We're worth the wait. Roger is reluctant, but agrees. And they part ways as Lacey happily says to him, see you in the new year.
This is by far one of the most outlandishly far-fucking-fetched breakups I have seen in a Hallmark movie. Because either Roger is a sociopath who thought he would get in a relationship with Lacey to keep her around because she has good stylistic sense and he needed to keep her. Or he's smiling on the outside and is going to go back to their shared design business to either stealthily and gradually steal the business out from under her or just burn the shit right to the ground. Because not only does he graciously agree to her breakup, but all these new terms that she just automatically sprung on him. Oh no, we're not doing the meeting. We're not doing those designs anymore. And we're going to have better work-life balance. Okay, bye. Oh, by the way, and I'm breaking up with you.
You're cool with that though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I'll see you in the new year. Okay. All right, bye-bye. Sure, Jan. Sure.
I second that. Sure, Jan. Sure.
Roger heads home and Lacey heads back to the reception. She runs into Ian and Ava's mom and asks if she's seen him. Ian, that is. But mom says that he's left. He's likely staying at the airport hotel because he needs to leave so early in the morning. Lacey heads into the lobby to see bonus Aunt Sarah there. Sarah, who is taking a break from the hustle and bustle of the reception, warmly greets Lacey and asks her how she's doing. Sarah confesses, I'm about to have everything I ever thought I wanted line up for me, but I can't help but think there's something missing. The person who I want to share it all with isn't here. And I can't help but thinking that maybe there's something about the cottage that brought me and Ian back together, but I messed it all up. Aunt Sarah radiates that big anti-love energy and simply says, maybe it's not too late. Lacey agrees and is about to head up to her room when Sarah says, oh, one more favor. Can you please take these presents to the cottage? They need to be under the tree for the couple by Christmas morning. And Lacey agrees, grabbing the presents and heading to the college. When she gets there, there's a fire in the fireplace and the place looks so gosh darn cozy and Christmassy. She heads over to the tree, putting the presents underneath, and she sees that Ian's heart ornament is back up, hanging off a prominent branch. She heads over to the mantel to look at the family pictures when Ian enters the room. Aunt Sarah had asked him to get the fire going in the champagne chilling, Ian explains. Oh, Aunt Sarah, you chaos maker, you. Ian explains, Ava and Mason should be here in about an hour, and I wanted to take a moment before they got here to remember all the good times we had. Lacey confesses, I broke up with Roger. I was listening to your toast, and I realized that Roger doesn't know all the sides of me. He basically just knows the work side. It made me reflect, and I want more than work in my life. I want love and relationship and family, and I know you're mad at me, but... Ian interrupts, why do you think I'm mad at you? Lacey explains, the sketch, you left it behind. Ian pulls the sketch of his fantasy restaurant out of his pocket and smiles. I didn't leave it. I dropped it, and I came back for it. Maybe there is something magic about this cottage after all. Lacey, I've always loved you. Lacey looks at him with hearts in her eyes. And I love you, and I'll be here for you when you get back from Finland or wherever your next adventure takes you. Ian shakes his head softly and smiles. I'm not going to Finland. I have another adventure planned, and it's with you. He leans towards her and they're about to kiss when Lacey's phone pings. Kisses interrupt. Well, it would be kisses interrupt us, but for one of the few times in Hallmark history, one of the heads, this time Lacey says, I'm not getting my phone. I'm getting a kiss from you. And they've finally taken our advice and just done the damn thing. And they kiss. And it's sweet. And we pan out from the kiss onto the exterior of the enchanted Christmas cottage. And before we go into our ratings, I had an extended version of this movie. Ooh. Where like an hour later when Ava and Mason like walk through the door and he's got her like in his arms as he carries her over the threshold. And Lacey and Ian like started making out and were like hot and heavy getting it on practically on the couch when the newlyweds arrive. And then fucking Ava just goes, get out, and shoos them away. This is my goddamn honeymoon. I need to get me some. Because, you know, they're virgins.
Yes, obviously.
Oh, Melody. Gentle listeners, the heavy panting coming from behind me is my dog, Melipee.
Melipee the pod dog.
Sorry. Melipee the pod dog, adding her 2 cents in. So, Corinne,
yes.
How many dry kisses would you give The Christmas Cottage?
Oh, you mean this top 10 Hallmark Christmas movie?
I'm going to go back and find out who said that now.
Well, let's see here. I give it 5 dry kisses for emotional affairs. Okay, so to be clear, I like Ian with an E, and I like Lacey. I like their chemistry together. That having been said, the whole thing where I'm supposed to be feeling tingly and warm and fuzzy and romantic about what's going on between them, I'm like, you're in a fucking relationship with Roger and you're like flirting the fuck up with this other guy, and this just does not feel good to me at all. It gets 1.5 dry kisses. Also, it is not at all diverse.
Oh, wow.
I know. I was thinking about going for the 2 dry kiss. But yeah, it's a generally enjoyable movie to watch if you don't think about it at all. But yeah, just like the strong emotional affair of it all. It's like really, it's a vibe and it's a lot.
Oh, wow.
What about you, Tamara? How many dry kisses do you give this award-winning movie?
Oh, well, yes. See, normally I would give this very enjoyable movie 5 dry kisses, but then I take 1 dry kiss away for them getting married at Christmas, and then I take another kiss away for the emotional affair, and then I take another kiss away for the absolutely ridiculous relationship between the bride and the maid of honor,
oh.
Where she's just like, how are you doing? Just don't pay any mind to my wedding or my day. Let's talk about you and your relationship.
Yeah.
Let's see, you can take 1/2 a dry kiss away for the diversity, and I am right there with you.
Yes!
1.5 dry kisses.
We have a
winner.
1.5
dry kisses. Yeah, I think this is the least amount we've ever put on a Hallmark film.
It is. Yeah. Before that, it was the 2 dry kiss movie with the guy who was fucking nagging her the entire time. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. If I knew then what I know now, like, that would have gotten 0 from me.
Oh, yeah.
No. I have seen way more Hallmark movies, and I am way more well-versed in the Hallmark-iverse. And I was, oh, no.
Yeah.
That one was rough.
Yeah.
Rough.
Yeah.
This one was at least, like, okay.
Yeah.
Would I ever watch it again? Probably not.
No.
Will I talk shit about it until the day I die?
Yes.
Probably.
So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we are, as I said at the top of the show, doing Christmas with the Cranks. It's more calm, less rom, but it does have its sweet moments between Mr. and Mrs. Crank.
Aw, I have not seen this movie, so send your prayers for me, gentle listeners. Tam and I have very different calm. I can't remember the word for it. I'm so tired from Obsessed Fest.
I know I felt bad because my coworker was like, are you going to come to my birthday party? Which was Wednesday. First of all, she's 25 having a birthday party on a Wednesday, which was just, I love her to death and I really, really wanted to go. But after Obsessed Fest and being around crowds and crowds of people and then flying home on Monday and then having to go immediately to work for another 8 hours and then going to work the next day and then a memorial service for another couple of hours, I was peopled out. I was like, I love you, but I'm just going to go home and be by myself for a little while.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to the Christmas with the Cranks journey. And I love Jamie Lee Curtis and Tim Allen. While problematic at times, also, you know, there's still some small space in my heart for him as well. And if you have anything you'd like to say about Christmas with the Cranks, the Christmas Cottage, Hallmark movies, or anything else, the fact that we're doing Christmas movies in November, ? You can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or via the social medias on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
And as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us, we would greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with 1
dry kiss.
Mwah! See you next time.
See you next time. camera knows when I'm sleeping or not because I snore like a motherfucker.
You have the melodic snores too. You were like singing a tune while we were at the Omni Hotel. Oh my goodness. I was like playing Name That Tune for a spell because I'm like, it kind of sounds like something, but I can't quite place it. Oh, wait. Don't turn around. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. That's what it sounded like when you were snoring.